The searchers found the Cherokee half an hour later in a ventilation intake, a few meters down the corridor from where Estouche had been shot. Further investigation showed it had been stolen from an arms locker in the stern of the ship, near the main engines, a locker whose fasteners had been carefully gimmicked for quick opening. There was, of course, no indication as to who had actually taken the weapon or fired the shot. For the next 2 days, Mara did some quiet poking around on her own, examining the scene of the attack, learning everything she could about Cherokees and their operation, and holding casual conversations with everyone who would talk to her. The interviews were, unfortunately, less than illuminating. Most of the crewers had stopped being neutral toward her and her questions, and gave half-hearted answers or none at all. The non-Chiss passengers were friendlier but even less helpful. Most had been alone at the time of the shooting, with no way of corroborating the stories. Only the stormtroopers claimed to have been together in Fell's ship. And even there, careful questioning established that they weren't in sight of each other during much of the critical period. Mara also spoke twice with Estouche, trying to draw out a more complete description of the incident. But he, too, was of little help. It was frustrating to hit so many blind alleys. It was the late part of ship's night that the room's comm panel buzzed them abruptly awake. Twitching away from her, Luke rolled over to key it on. "Yes?" he called.
"This is Aristocrat Formby,"
the voice noted.
"You and Jedi Skywalker may wish to wake and get yourselves dressed."
"What's wrong?" Mara called.
"Nothing's wrong. We've arrived."
"There," Formby said, pointing at the main command center display. "There, just to the right of center. Do you see it?" "Yes," Luke said, peering at the image. There was a ship there, all right. Its once shiny hull blackened and crackled with multiple laser and missile impacts. It lay poised just over the crest of a steep hill on the planetoid's surface, as if it had been somehow frozen in the act of toppling over the edge. And as the Chaff Envoy continued its inward spiral, he saw how it was the ship managed to stay suspended in midair. From points near the bow and the stern, slender tubes could be seen extending from the underside of the hull, stretching downward at a shallow angle and connecting with another vessel mostly buried in the rubble at the foot of the hill. Midway along each of the tubes, he noticed, another pair of curved tubes veered off, stretching down and inward, and coming together as they disappeared into the rocky hillside. "Is that your outbound flight?" Formby asked quietly. Luke nodded. The ship was a dreadnought, all right. 600 meters long, armed with an awesome array of turbo lasers and other weapons, capable of carrying and supporting nearly 20,000 crewers and passengers. "Engines look mostly intact," Mara commented. "The turbo laser blisters and shield bays were pretty well pounded, but the rest doesn't seem too bad. With some work, it might actually be able to fly again."
"The vessel on the surface appears capable of sustaining life," Formby agreed. "The sensors indicate it has air and heat and is using low levels of power. The other vessel, the one half visible at the foot of the hill, exhibits none of those characteristics."
"What about the rest of it?" Jinsler asked.
"I understood outbound flight was composed of 6 dreadnoughts.
The rest must be underground," Fell said.
"Do you have any idea what shape it's in?" Jinsler asked. "The parts that are underground, I mean."
"Our instruments cannot say," Formby said. "We will have to wait until we are aboard to determine that."
"So what's the plan?" Luke asked.
"The planetoid is too small to hold significant atmosphere," Formby said, nodding toward the display. "We will therefore land the Chaff Envoy on top of the hill beside the upper vessel and run a transfer tunnel to the portside docking port near the aft end. Then all those who will be going aboard will do so. Once we're aboard, there will be a short ceremony in which I will recount the Chiss part in the vessel's destruction and express the depth of our regret," he went on. "I will then ask for forgiveness on behalf of the 9 ruling families and the Chiss Ascendancy and formally return the vessel's remains to Ambassador Jinsler, representing the New Republic, and Master Skywalker and Jedi Jade Skywalker, representing the Jedi Order."
"And us?"
Bersh asked anxiously.
"Will there be a place in the ceremony for the Jeroen people to express our gratitude
Whether or not you are permitted to speak will be a decision for Ambassador Jinsler, Formby said gravely. Of course you may, Jinsler assured the Jeroen. As will you, Commander Fell, he added, though I'm still not certain what exactly your interest is in outbound flight. Remembrances come in all sizes and shapes, Fell said obliquely, as do acts of repentance and atonement for past failures. Regardless, we'll be honored to participate in the ceremony. Then I suggest all return to your quarters or vessels and prepare, Formby said. In 1 hour, we shall begin.